You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's Series 7, Episode 15 coming your way today. Kieran Burke and Gary Riley with you once again. We're brought to you as ever by our main sponsor, Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound lighting and AV solutions this League of Ireland season. Gary, we've had some big name guests over the last couple of weeks. I think our interview with Dermot Usher caught a lot of attention a couple of weeks ago, and obviously Enda Curran, he stirred a few pots last week, didn't he? But so much has happened in the league over the last week or so. It's just me and you this week. We're going to thrash out some big talking points. Obviously, we were down in Wexford the other night, a great result for the town, but a lot of Wexford fans have been on to us asking us to discuss things from a Wexford point of view, and I think we saw a few things that would concern us the other night, so we're going to discuss that. Obviously, yeah. There's a bit of concern off the field at Waterford. There's probably not too much we can say on that, but we will touch on it best we can. I've got a few things I want to say on Athlone as well, so a lot of our talking points again this week are First Division based. But where we'll start tonight, before we go into our Premier Division review from the weekend, is today's breaking news, and that is that John Daly is now the new permanent boss at St. Patrick's Athletic. Look, I suppose over the last couple of weeks, Gary, performances have been good. Results haven't been too bad either. So he definitely had his name in the hat. I think we were talking the other day going on to Wexford, and we said to each other, I wonder if his comments where he was looking for clarity, was that going to do him a bit of damage? We thought maybe it might, but it seems that the board more than happy to give John Daly a crack at things.
Yeah, it looks to be the case. Like we were saying on the road down that did he... You know, I don't want to be listening to this boy type of talk. And it seems like, look, I think he has improved St. Pat's. I think, what's your boy's name? Andrew Kinnean had a stat up there about that St. Pat's have went up the pass and completion table and stuff like that from the lower half of the table up to third.
Which it's funny. It's funny you mentioned Andrew. I was actually going to bring up a stat I just after seeing he's posted there. Young Curtis, who obviously got the winner the other night in the derby, yeah. Most foul player in the league, I think, at the moment. So goes to show his talent and his potential. But sorry, get back to your point on Daly.
Yeah, it was just that, you know, he had probably done himself a disservice, well, in our eyes anyway. And look, it hasn't been the case. Fair play to him. He's got out of it, but I think it's probably a good appointment based on what we've seen so far. Some nice results that he has put in. So, look, I think it's a fair enough appointment. And
yeah, he's reportedly seen off the challenge of a couple of former Irish internationals. I think everyone know Richard Dunn's name was heavily linked with the job, whether that was concrete or whether it was just speculation. I suppose we'll never really know. Neil Lennon's name was obviously linked, but I think financially that was never going to be realistic. So.
I could never see that happen now, to be quite honest.
No, it would have been great to see. It would have been good fun to see Lennon and go up against a few of the wilder characters in the league, maybe. But what I was going to say is, I suppose at the moment, there's no real standout out-of-work candidate, is there? I mean, it probably was Keith Long. He's obviously in work now. There's no one else that's really out of work that you would have automatically kind of associated with a job like this. So why not give Daly a crack, I suppose?
Yeah, I suppose that's probably the point that, you know, he's been around. We've seen what he can do. People are relatively happy with what he has turned in so far. So I think why not give him a go at this point? So, look, I think it's a fine decision.
The only thing I will say, just to I suppose, give balance to a discussion we had previously, we were quite critical of Sligo appointing John Russell after he had worked alongside Liam Buckley. I mean, Daly was the number two to Clancy, and I think Clancy, it's probably fair to say, tried his best, but I don't think the Pats fans really ever took to him, did they? Or his style of how he went about things at Pats. And, you know, Daly was part of that setup. So are they taking a bit of a risk at the same time by not maybe going for a clean break here?
I think they are to a certain extent. I think part of the Clancy issue was the unjustness of Stephen O'Donnell leaving in St. Pat's eyes. So I think no matter who came in, unless they replicated serious success, you know, with O'Donnell winning the league, I think it would have always been a more difficult job than probably it needed to be. So, you know, there's a couple of elements that are probably made it a bit more difficult for Clancy, you know, just amongst the fans. They were quite possibly maybe unfairly to a degree, but I think people were a bit annoyed about the style of play. Probably a bit of a different style than what Stephen O'Donnell put in. So I think that made it a bit more difficult for him as well. But look, these are all, this is part of it. This is part of coming into a new club and trying to set your own stall out and putting your own emphasis or own ideas onto the team.
I suppose from a Pats board point of view as well, there's no need to really panic as of yet, because I mean, they would have taken top four at the start of the season. They're fourth now after a decent spell of results. They're under Daly, so it's probably better to get that I suppose that bit of continuality, bit of, you know, get the decision made quickly. Players are familiar with him. Give him till the end of the season, see how he gets on, and then review things. But, you know, they could have waited another few weeks, I suppose, for maybe what they saw would be the right man to get the job, or maybe a bigger name or someone with fresher ideas. But, you know, they might have lost their way in the league by then. So
I think a solution was needed. And that was the main goal. So they've got one. It seems satisfactory enough. Is that deal until the end of the season, is it?
I'd have to actually, I didn't get fully reading the reports earlier on.
Busy man.
Very busy man. Let me have a quick look here. But of course, like Cork City, you're looking for a manager at the minute as well. So I don't know, would they be shopping in the same type of manager pool? But as you said, it was just important for Pats to go and get that deal done, and they've made their decision today.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's the key point. Get it done, get it out of the way to a certain extent, and they can concentrate on other things. But I think the main solution is that they've actually done the job, and they can relax to a degree now. But it's important that they kick on now and don't just be like, oh, that's the new manager, bounce kind of over and done with. It's important to get the solution going.
I'm just reading the statement here. I'm only flying through, but I don't see any mention of length of contract or anything like that. So, it's a wait and see job. You know, he's obviously got a bit of work to do there. So, look, best of luck to him. Right, let's go into the Premier Division results from the weekend. Only one place to start, Gary, and Derry fans, of course, rightfully so, straight on to us after the results on Friday, because I think we were all but calling the title race done last week. But Shamrock Rovers beaten at home by Drogheda, while Derry were comprehensive winners against UCD. So Derry City sit top of the Premier Division table.
Yeah, hard to believe, isn't it? I'm a bit surprised that they lost, but I think it's, while I do call them Terminator, and the Terminator doesn't lose that often, if at all, well, I know Terminator dies in the end, but like...
Oh, I haven't watched it.
Spoiler alert. you know what I mean, though? Like, there's an element there, or not an element, but like, there's... What are they going to do? Win every game for the rest of the season, and that's it? Like, that's not really realistic.
Nobody saw this coming, though. And people have been onto us since, and they said, fair play, lads, you were saying Drogheda are playing well, but neither of us predicted this. We thought with Drogheda just been out of, in terms of results, been out of form, going to Talla and getting anything was unlikely. Two brilliant goals. Well, let's dissect some of the goals quickly. Draper's the first one, the counter-attack. I think the defending there from Rovers, I mean, it's two against one. Draper's outnumbered, and he gives Hoare just a clever little nudge, and I think Hoare never really regained his balance after that. He was like Bambi on ice, and Draper just steps around.
Yeah, he was all over the shop, wasn't he?
Buries it into the bottom corner, but from a defensive point of view, that's a very poor goal to give away. But the second goal, that's one of the best passing goals we've seen from any team this season.
Yeah, I think we were treated to two very nice goals like that. I think Longford's second goal was very nice, but it wasn't as sweet as this. Some really nice stuff, and I think it kind of surprised Shamrock Rovers. They were a bit shocked that this happened to a certain extent. Like, they were a bit shell-shocked that this was actually going on at all. So I think it was surprising that their reaction was so poor. But you can't take anything away from the goal. It was an absolutely wonderful bit of play. Really confident stuff. I think that's what I got out of it, apart from it being a good goal. But like, it shows that they're playing with a lot of confidence. They believe in what's going on. So I think it's great to see that they're, you know, enjoying their football, or whatever cliche you want to make out of it. But I think they've been playing with some really nice stuff this season. And look, I was trying to, I think I said last week that are they actually playing that good?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But look, the that's a really good goal. And to put them 2-0 up really put Shamrock Rovers in the back foot, even at home.
Yeah, but then when Rovers do get their goal, what, 77 minutes or so on the clock, you think, ah, here we go now. They're either going to draw or even win this game. But fair play to draw, they were held the pressure. Yeah. From a Rovers point of view, they had something like 29 shots in this game.
It was scandalous, wasn't it?
They weren't very efficient in front of goal, obviously. I think they had less than half of those on target. But do you expect Rovers now to do, like we always say, bounce back now and probably win 5 or 6 on the spin? Is that what you expect the reaction will be from this result?
I think you have to. I think that's the only real way to look at it at all. They've been so clinical in so many games. Like even when you look at some of the games that they were poor in or didn't get a great result in early on in the season, it took them a while to get motoring. But I think they've kind of cured that element in a lot of ways. Like they're not, they've been so clinical so often, I find it hard to believe that they won't be able to just come back now, because they've gotten out of that kind of funk they were in at the start of the season, and they've been so clinical in so many games. I think this one is just a bit of a odd one rather than a rule, so I don't think we're going to see much of an issue with Shamrock Rovers going forward.
Yeah, as for Drogheda though, what a fantastic result. Fully deserving of it as well, the way they've been playing this season. I think if you were to ask Kevin Doherty, would he rather have, you know, the points that they probably should have and lose this game? You know, this is only 3 points at the end of the day, and they've left a lot of points behind them in the last few months. So it's a nice reward for the work, but I'm sure he would have rather had an extra 2 wins or even, you know, a win and a couple of draws.
Of course. Yeah, that's always going to be the case. Like, would you rather lose 10-0 against someone but have 6 extra points?
Yeah, but look, for their supporters to go up to Tala and win, they wouldn't have expected it themselves. So it's a brilliant result for Drogheda. The only frustration will be, we'll come to Cork later on, but Cork beat Sligo. So they're still only, what, are they three? No, they're six, I think, 3 or 6 ahead of Cork. But as we keep saying about Drogheda, like the way they've been playing this season, they probably deserve to be a lot higher up the table than they are. That's right. But that's the way the cookie crumbles at the moment. Right, let's move on and just very quickly speak about Derry. They obviously had a 4-1 win against UCD, and it could have been an awful lot more only for Kian Moore. I thought he had a great game in the UCD nets, but it ended 4-1, and this was a little bit of the Michael Duffy show, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. He put in a couple of nice crosses, caused a lot of problems for the UCD back line, but I think It was always going to be a one-way ticket. I don't think there was any real danger of UCD causing that many issues for Derry throughout the game. I think it was going to be what we look for, or what we call a professional performance. Like you said it last week, if they beat the life out of them, it's only UCD. But if they lose or make hard work of it, they should be burying these. So no matter what, I think you were right last week, no matter what way they do it, it's not going to be good enough. Mm. So I think that's was a good point, to be fair.
It was a good performance, though. You know, as we said, they created lots of chances. Could have been an awful lot more than 4, only for the UCD goalkeeper. Just on Derry, obviously the other news story today, Ryan Graydon, Fleetwood Town. They're obviously listening to this podcast because we've been raving about this man this season. Derry turning down an approach from Fleetwood today. It doesn't look like he has one of these release clauses in the contract, according to reports today, which is good news. So Derry obviously can bargain that a little bit harder. But
yeah,
I was talking to a Derry fan today, and he made the point to me. He's probably always going to say this. He feels Graydon would be better served maybe staying a little bit longer at Derry, because when he left Longford, we highlighted, you know, Graydon has great potential to develop. He needs to develop his end product, and that has definitely improved. I think he's got a good bag of assists. He could have 6 assists already this season. But the Derry fan has said to me he could have an awful lot more too. His end product still isn't there. So he thinks maybe another year in this environment, playing with players like Michael Duffy. I mean, we've seen them link up very well in recent games. Would he be better served doing something like that? Or do you have to go and take this chance? Obviously, if Derry allow him to go, it's up to Derry whether they give him the chance to go to Fleetwood or not. But I think he's 24 now. He's kind of getting into that territory now or never, is he?
Yeah, probably. But come on, like, you know what I mean? Oh, yeah, he's not that good. Let him stay for another year. You know, come on.
Not that Derry are in a financial position where they don't have to, you know, Fleetwood throw out a figure that they don't feel is reasonable. They're in absolutely no position. They're not under any pressure to accept it. So,
no, I'm not saying that, but I just think it's a bit rich. Like, I think Graydon has been probably, has he been Derry's most productive player this season?
He's up there with Doherty, in my opinion. I think Doherty himself have been brilliant. And obviously Duffy now, since he's come back, is starting to show the Michael Duffy form that we all know. But
yeah, so I think it's a bit like, it doesn't really ring that deeply that, oh yeah, no, he needs another year. His end product isn't that great. I think his end product is fairly good. He's probably a late bloomer, but to a large extent. What is he? You said he's 24 now.
24 now. And I think like a good few years ago, you go back, if a player was 25-ish, they weren't really going to England, were they? But now players are going over that little bit older. So there is still time for him. But
yeah, well, you think you're on the record of saying, oh, 26, his legs are gone.
The point I'm making, I suppose, just from Graydon's point of view as well, if he stays, he's going to have European football under his belt. That's a good experience to have as well. So there's benefits to staying, but you can obviously see the attraction of going to a team in England as well.
Oh, certainly. But I don't think... I think...
Do you think he stays or does he go?
I don't know. I think it's going to be very hard for Derry because they've gone through some... And they've really put in like some dire performances this season when they should be, you know, taking all 3 points at their ease. So it's probably going to be difficult to let him go considering they have the... financial prowess.
I think they'll convince him to stay.
To convince him to stay fully?
Yeah, I think he'll stay this season anyway.
Yeah, most probably. I can see where you're coming from. I think the luxury that Derry have is that they can afford to hold on to him.
Yeah.
And they're under no pressure to get rid of him or get a few pound in or anything like that. So
yeah,
I think that's going to be an important difference maker here.
Right, moving along. Dundalk 2, Bowes 2. Dundalk were cruising. They were 2-0 up in this game. It was a difficult night for poor old James Talbot. I think he was at fault for the first. He comes out, no man's land. Hoban heads it in. The second one, he's unlucky. It's a brilliant strike from Conor Malley, who probably looks like one of the better additions Dundalk have made. A great strike from him. It comes back off the crossbar, hits Talbot in the back of the head and goes in. But Bowes, from what I'm told from people that were at the game, obviously yourself was there, Dundalk may be lucky to even come away with a point in the end. A massive second half performance from Declan Devine's side.
Yeah, he got a great response. Even the commentators were saying on the highlights that it was a game of two halves. They were poor in the second half. It was like a different Dundalk that came out, by all accounts. So that's not great. That's not what you want to be seeing, particularly, you know, at this stage of the season. And I say that because we've made a lot of comments about, you know, our teams just gelling together, and, you know, time for gelling is over. You need to be gelled at this point. And if you're not gelled by now, well, then you're doing something quite wrong. So I think it's disappointing from, like, no matter what way you cut it, you're 2-0 up at home.
Yeah, not the first time. Of course, the Loud Derby at home to draw it out there 2-2, came back to 2-2. Now, they did win the game 3-2, but this is something we never saw from Dundalk in the past. 2-0 at Oriel, it was done and dusted.
Yeah, but, you know, sure, you're probably going back to 2015 and 16 when they were running the show. No,
even last year, they lost, what, one game at Oriel? Their home form has always been strong. And I was still quite strong, but there's just, I don't think teams are going to Oriel anymore with any fear.
No, none. And why should they? Because like it's not the Dundalk that we remember from a few years ago. They've changed a lot.
Mm.
Is there anybody left over? You remember?
Well, Andy Boyle, I suppose, was there in the good days.
Oh, God.
Sloggett's won stuff there. I know he's injured at the moment. Hoban's obviously still there. There's still players there, but yeah, no, it's not the same caliber of a squad as obviously the glory years as such. I think it is quite a paper thin squad. They're missing a lot of players at the moment, but there's been a lot of talk. I didn't see huge chunks of this game, to be honest. I've just been speaking to people that were at speaking to people around the town this week.
Aye.
And a comment that keeps coming up, it's been coming up over the last couple of weeks, a lot of people are talking about some decisions that O'Donnell are making with his subs, and just decisions within the game management hasn't been great. Now, I can't speak to that because I've seen a lot of Dundalk early in the season. I haven't seen them as much lately, but there was a lot of talk online after this game about Wasari Williams, that he was carrying a knock and apparently he should have been took off and O'Donnell left him on, and people feel that maybe he was culpable for a couple of them goals. So look, again, I don't know, I wasn't there. I didn't see huge chunks of this game, but it's interesting to see comments like that kind of reappearing.
Yeah, they don't seem to be going away, these ideas, and that's disappointing. But that's squarely on O'Donnell. Like, even you made the comment there that people are annoyed with O'Donnell. They probably should have been annoyed with him a while ago. You know, there hasn't been that much. Oh, you know, Dundalk are playing really well. They've been not great in a lot of games, you know, and the results have been okay, but you kind of be expecting a bit more than what you're getting from Dundalk, considering they're in Europe.
To be honest, I personally think they are where they should be. I can't remember if I predicted them top four or not. I don't think I did. I think I said they'd struggle for top four this season.
I think you said they'd win the division, no?
No, I definitely didn't. With the squad they have, I think where they are at the moment, they're level on points with Pat, so they're still in the mix for fourth. If they can get fourth spot again this season and into Europe, be another season of overachievement.
It would be heroic, yeah, absolutely. But I'm not sure. I don't think I see that happening.
For Bo is an important point, because if they lost this one, there was kind of like they're already nearly been. Last week we had a big opening segment on the show talking about the title race, and we never really mentioned Bo's. They're kind of already been left out of that conversation. They're 6 points behind now. They've got a game in hand, so they can still keep with the chase and with the top two at the moment. But I think it was important for them to get something from this game, so well done to them for that second half performance. The live game on Virgin Media, Shells nil, Pats one. Sam Curtis with a winner from a set piece. He headed home from a corner. Duffer would be disappointed with the manner of the goal they gave away, but this was a tightly contested contest.
It was, yeah. Probably, what would you think of the goal? Like, it was a good goal, but for
such a young player, I thought his movement was very, very intelligent. He seems to be a player that just has a lot of intelligence on the pitch. But from a Shell's point of view, there's a lot of ball watching and
there's a lot of standing around and
cricket. They just haven't reacted there. I think the problem for Shells, again, it was a game where they got into decent positions at times and the end product wasn't there. I think they only had one shot on target. So I think you threw the comment out earlier on the one of the previous episodes, you said you were going to struggle to fully invest in predicting Shells to win games until they get the goal scoring thing sorted out. Now, they have been scoring goals lately, they've been winning games, but I think this danger is always going to be there. They're going to get into the final third, and if the likes of Moylan has an off day, you're kind of looking around, well, who else is going to put it in the net?
That's the big problem. Like, you have no one that you can hang your hat on. And I don't think, like, even I was going to ask there about Dundalk, like, they're heading into Europe now. Is there any even talk about players that are going to come in? Like, is there any like, oh, Jesus, we're going to get this fella. He's a good lad. He played for Wigan or something. I don't know. But do you know what I mean?
Like, I haven't heard anything. I'm sure they're looking at players. But at the same time as well, they've got lads on loan. And the whole conversation, I suppose, will happen over whether those players are going to stay. It can be a little bit messy when you've got players on loan. But I know with Sari Williams there, it was announced the other day, Swansea, they're letting him go when his contract's up in the summer. So I'd imagine Dundalk will just sign him. There was the other Williams chap there on loan last season. He went back over. I think his contract now is running out with Swansea as well, so maybe they'll take him back. But look, they need serious investment. I think Dundalk as the squad just isn't up to scratch. But no. Shells, they definitely need to add something in that final third, or they're probably always going to come up short, or every so often they're going to come up short in games where they probably could have got something. But for Pats,
I think that's the killer win, isn't it though? Like, they're not getting the rewards. I think it's slightly different than Drogheda, where you think that they're playing really well, and they are playing well, but they're not getting the rewards for the work that they do. Whereas Shells are probably more productive in a lot of ways, but don't have the human beings to put it in at the moment.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting contrast between the two sides.
Let's move on to Cork City and Sligo Rovers. Cork City winning by 1-0. And Tunde Olabi, I think he's had a big impact in recent weeks. They seem to be getting in behind teams a lot more. We saw him score that goal in Oriel. There was a few occasions here he got in behind. He just couldn't apply the finish. But even the goal, it's a ball in behind. The Sligo defence is odd. They're trying to push out. They get caught. Keaton's in behind. He takes it really well, Rory Keaton.
He does, yeah. And I think the ball in from O'Brien Whitmarsh is just delicious. It is just so nice, but the way he takes it on as well, like the way he controls the ball and plays himself into a bit of space.
Comes from good stock, of course.
Does he?
Whitmarsh. His brother, good footballer as well.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know. Are you related to him or something like that? I didn't know what you were talking about.
I was just trying to big up our new signing. But anyway, go on. Sorry, I went over your head.
We'll come to him. We'll come to him. Don't worry about that. Totally. I think he's been having, I think, would it be fair to say that O'Brien Whitmarsh, the Cork one, well, they're both from Cork, but the Cork City one is the probably one of their better players this season or best players this season?
I probably haven't seen enough of them live, to be honest, to give you an answer on that. But the fact that he's been looked at by big clubs in England probably tells you all you need to know about him.
Yeah, but I was just saying, I've seen a lot of talk about him in a positive light. He's making some really nice runs, connecting players up, as we've just seen. I think, as you said, he comes from good stock, of course. But
I think since Tunde's been introduced back into the team, I think himself and Keaton, they're stretching back. They seem to be playing with a bit more, you know, they're trying to get in behind teams a lot more.
Yeah, they seem to have a bit more cop or something. I don't know what's kind of with it. And that's maybe, not to say
maybe
that.
Maybe that's a little bit of a tweak from Buckley and the lads down there.
I think so.
Still no talk on who might get that job full time, but that's definitely something I've noticed. But on Sligo Rovers, our good old friends, this is another very poor result.
What can we not talk about? I've been saying it for so long. I'm not really sure. I know you're always going to play difficult games, particularly when you're playing teams that are fighting for their lives and just lost a manager, having a difficult season so far, and you know that you're always capable of dropping points in that situation, and that's absolutely fine. But why did it have to be Sligo? Do you know what I mean? Why was no one else done that? Do you know what I mean? It's always Sligo. That
the way they're going, they're going to be behind Drogheda in the next couple of weeks. They're going to be down to eighth.
Fine, yeah, no problem with that. That's probably about where they're due. To be quite honest,
yeah, I'd fully agree with that. To be honest,
it goes back to the same thing I've been saying for so long. What's the, I used to say it about Finn Harps. What's the long term situation here? What's the next step? Where are we going from here? Doesn't seem to be much of that type.
I don't hear much discontent from the locals though. So I don't know that they feel that maybe the squad they have is this where they should be or.
Or I'm wrong. Am I? Very unlikely now to be wrong.
I don't know. I don't know. It's one for our Sligo Rovers listeners to answer. But
you know what I'd love? I'd love to hear someone that thinks. Obviously, it's easy for me to. I want to hear someone that thinks like me. But is there anybody around Sligo that's going, oh, actually, this is crap?
Yeah.
And it has been crap for years. We've been spending a lot of money. We've been doing a lot of fundraising, and we're going nowhere. Yeah, I'd love to hear if someone else.
If that is you, get in touch with us. We're on Twitter. You'll find us very easily. Right, let's move on to the First Division games, Gary. We have a lot to unpack in the First Division review here. But we'll start with the game we're at, because I think people like to hear about our lives, don't they? They like to know how our trips went and everything.
So. Well, can we start with the kebab, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Dennis's Kebab House.
Yeah, we had to go to Dennis Scorty for this. We've done this Scorty, before.
Yeah, it's...
I know, good people. Probably going to be a bit more...
A bit more friendly, maybe.
Friendly, yeah. We're not that precious, but just call me boss man once in a while. That's all you have to do, kebab man, or kebab shop proprietor.
So,
good food. Delighted with it. Nice little. Well, it's a small little place. Yeah, you wouldn't be taking any hot dates there now, but you'll certainly get a good feed.
Yeah, we enjoyed it. Yeah, out of five, what are we going about? 3.5, maybe, just marking them down on the lack of carpet for the lads.
four out of five. The only thing I'd really go down on, chips could have been a bit better.
Chips were poor, and the chips in the chip van in Ferry Carrig were poor as well. I needed a little starter before the kebab, so I don't know. I know you're famous for the strawberries down there, lads, but the potatoes, bit of improvement needed there. And on the field, big improvements needed. Look, we can talk about the town in a second. It was a great performance from the town, but We have been getting messages a lot from Wexford fans this season. Some of them we've read out, some of them we haven't. We've kept to ourselves. We said we'll come back to this later in the year because we've obviously seen Wexford early in the season when they beat Longford. We're over on the far side. We were getting a lot of comments about the dugout and about kind of tactics maybe been inputted or not been inputted. And a lack of kind of emotion on the sideline. Now, look, you don't, just because you run up and down the line like an eagle, it doesn't make you a great manager. But we've been getting a lot of messages from supporters that the field, there's a bit of a disconnect already kind of between the new management team and the supporters. They don't feel there's any warmth there. And
there's no love.
We were watching at times the other day, there was nobody standing up on the line at times for Wexford. There was very little instructions coming in. And some of the instructions that were coming in was just the stuff you hear at Sunday League, you know, box them in.
Try harder,
do this, do that.
Score a goal.
And the way they played, I mean, they were just so wide open. This was the easiest game Longford have had in a long, long time. This was actually the easiest game we've had this season. And I go back to, I think Longford beat Bray last year 3-0 in the Carlisle. Do you remember that one? It was a cracking hot day.
Oh, yeah, lovely day. Adiemo scored two or three.
That was very, very comfortable. That was probably the previous easiest game Longford have had. So I'm going back about a season and a half there for a game that was as easy as this. Anytime Longford played the ball out from the back and into the midfield, Wexford were just wide open. They were there to be got at. Longford could have probably scored a few more goals on the night. It was a shocking performance from Wexford. Yeah, atmosphere in the ground was very flat as well, going back to that kind of disconnect that people have been talking to us about. I'd be very, very worried about the way their season is going.
Yeah, I think we're getting into the stage of this is fizzling out into...
Is it working? That's the simple question I think you'd have to ask. And from what I saw the other night, the definitive answer would be no.
No, I don't think it is working. I think there's too many... too many points that aren't going well enough.
Well, forget about the results for a minute. I look at that team the other night. There's no style of play. There doesn't seem to be any real strategy about them. There was nothing to them. That would be if someone asked me to describe Wexford, I'd just say there's nothing to them.
Yeah. No. No.
Everything's on the
style,
fly.
No. Sorry.
Everything's on the fly.
Yeah, I think so. A bit of like mix
and even at that, there's not any real creativity or off the cuff genius, or you know, it was just so flat and easy to play against.
Very easy to play against. They were really at nothing throughout the game, and I don't think like they didn't lay a glove on the town at all.
No,
really.
No. Start at the end of the first half, they got in behind a couple of times and probably could have scored. And start at the second half, but bar that little 5 or 10 minute period either side of the half. It was just total domination and cruise control for Longford Town.
Yeah, it was, which is obviously something that we haven't really enjoyed too many times this season, which is kind of strange. But, more strange that we got it in the game we got it in. But like, I think there's issues going on in Ferry Carrick that aren't being resolved. You know, we talked about them a few times earlier on the season where we're getting the comments in from different people. And it's clear that there doesn't seem to be much for changing at the moment.
No.
I found the atmosphere quite...
strange.
Yeah, it was like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, it was nearly like the game was called off an hour beforehand and then it was put back on half an hour beforehand. So like, oh God, you know, we may head out and watch this type thing.
Yeah, on that, like we've obviously kind of given our experiences at other grounds. There was one ground we felt it was very unwelcoming and very unfriendly. Wexford, the club staff, the club volunteers, everyone around
great
the ground,
people.
Brilliant people, so friendly. Always find that when I go down there. But the atmosphere was so flat. All you could hear was that bloody generator buzzing for 90 minutes. It's absolutely horrible to listen to, but... You know, the people down there are fantastic, but the atmosphere in the ground was just so, so flat.
Yeah, it was just, look, it's not a good environment at the moment, I don't think. They're not in a good place. I think what obviously makes it all worse is the excitement.
Yeah.
You know, the initial, this is going to be a big season for the club.
A rebrand.
Well, there's so many points to it, but like the fact that they've been so poor off the pitch, and like I can't remember too many times that they're like Wexford have been like really annoyed with the manager.
You know, I suppose there hasn't been a massive expectation down there. But there has been this season, and maybe that's done them a bit of damage. But I
there
mean,
has been this season, but like, surely to God, you know, they're not going to be like, you know, the one year that they might do something, they're like, now they're really on the manager's back all of a sudden. They don't seem to be, they haven't been blessed with like 40 years of success.
Yeah.
And they're thinking that they're deserving of something.
One thing that a lot of Wexford fans have said to me, last season under Ian Ryan, there was excitement around the team. They were playing good football and they could see a project kind of growing. They thought if he stayed there this year and added a bit, they could see it stepping forward.
Okay.
Whereas they're looking at this current team and after all the early excitement of everything has gone away and they're just looking at the, you know, the raw performances on the pitch and the results, they're like, this is going, this doesn't feel like it's going anywhere. It doesn't feel like there's a greater long-term plan. And I think that's kind of bottling up a bit of frustration with fans as well.
Yeah, that's not going to help at all. Like, and I think the longer that goes on, the longer, you know, you do be thinking, well, when's it going to change? And you get into a bit of a rut. And then, as we've said on a couple of occasions, the season's over. And the promise that you started out with in the early part of the season is a very, very, very distant memory. And that can happen quite quickly before you even know it. So I think they need, I'm not really sure, like, is the solution making a change in the dugout?
I think that has to be considered now because they're eighth in the table. They're 5 points off the playoffs. This was not the plan. This
no,
was
it's never not.
The plan.
No.
So
it certainly wasn't the plan, but I think also we're looking at, like, even I couldn't believe some of the stuff I was hearing from the dugout, the stuff I did hear last night or Friday night, excuse me. Boxed them in.
Do you know what was worrying about that? First of all, players shouldn't have to be told that, you know, Longford had to throw up against their own corner. But
that's not even a tactic. That's what you tell a 12-year-old.
I know that, but the players shouldn't need to be told that. Longford have a throw deep in their own territory. You go and box them in, try and turn it over. But even when that instruction was shouted on by a member of the coaching staff, they didn't do it.
No.
And I looked at that and I said, oh, wow, what's going on here?
Yeah, I know that's a fair point. That there's no... Would you say it's lack of respect at this point? Would that be?
Well, we don't know. We're not within the dressing room. But I mean, if you were an outsider looking at that, you would kind of question, Jesus, what's going on here? Or where's the leadership on the pitch even?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think there's a number of issues there that don't seem to be getting resolved. Like, there's been, as you mentioned, we've been always getting comments in from Wexford fans making kind of worrying comments like that for the last little while.
Yeah.
And we haven't really got much of a...
No, but we wanted to see it firsthand for ourselves before we made any judgment. I think we saw enough the other night to say, yeah, I think them Wexford fans that have been onto us are spot on in what they're saying.
Yeah, they're not crazy.
Yeah. Right, another club I want to take a hammer to, and I don't think I've done that too often this season, and I genuinely don't try to do it too often on this podcast, but Cove 2 at Lone 2, before we get to the game itself. So last week on the show, we discussed the rumours that were circulating about their manager at the time. Name gone out of my head, Gary, help me here.
Gordon Brett.
Yeah, there was rumours that he had left the club. We contacted that loan last week. Still haven't got a reply even to say they received our email or anything like that.
So. They're busy, though. They're busy people.
Yeah. So, look, he clearly has gone. He wasn't on the bench the other night. The Portuguese chap that was on the bench earlier in the season, who magically appeared on the bench earlier in the season, he was back again.
Yeah.
And then there was an American chap on the bench that apparently is involved with Vallejo. The club that obviously Athlone have partnered up with. But again, no statement from Athlone. No social media posts. The only reason we know this is through the FAI Connect app. This is an absolute disgrace.
It is, yeah. It's pathetic, really. And I don't know. Like, should I be annoyed? Like, should we be annoyed with the FAI? Or is there any point?
Well, I've said it before. I know people I think we said it on this show before about kind of minimum standards in terms of just media and social media. I do think something needs to be looked at here. And I fully understand we're dealing with a lot of volunteers in the league. Yourself, I know you do the Twitter on match day sometimes for Longford, but I think, you know, there has to be a bare minimum. Like, teams should be going out an hour before kickoff, or 45 team news should be going up there. There should be bare minimum. I mean, a managerial replacement, if that is what has happened, nobody knows. And it's very worrying again that it took an independent news outlet. I think it was the Westmead, one of the Westmead newspapers. They broke the story that Brett had left.
Yeah.
Now they haven't followed up with, you know, who's going to replace him or anything like that. But the fact that the fans, the few fans they have left, the few fans that have stuck with the club through all this nonsense over the last few years, had to find out through an independent news source as opposed to finding out from their own club. Again, we've said it before, it's a total lack of respect for their own fans.
It is, but like, even we said it last week, they didn't get dug out enough for that. And that's probably fair enough. It's at loan. They're not exactly powerhouses of the game in Ireland anymore. Were they ever? I suppose they were, kind of. But like, I think the point is, they haven't been pushed on this enough. And it is a lack of respect around the club. But like, if the new financiers come in, then what they say goes, and probably difficult for volunteers or people within the club to just go, well, I'm going to go rogue here and put out a statement. It's certainly not great for the fans, but the new people at the helm need to realise that. And how can they not? Like, if they've come over to Ireland to run a football club or buy a football club or whatever is going on in Athlone, surely they know that they can't just go around and do whatever they want. Well, they must. So, seems to be like
it's been run like a club for the lads. You know what I mean? This is our club. We'll do what we want. No one else needs to know about what goes on here.
Yeah, mind your business. Jeez, that'd be great. I'd love to be able to do that in a lot of areas myself, but it's not really a runner. So I think they need to something should be said. So, like, that should be.
I think they need to be putting a bit of pressure on them, certainly. A decent result for them on the pitch, though. A draw away to Cove. That Twitter account that posts all the cliches had it up today, actually. Hard place to go, difficult place to go. But Cove's Park, difficult place to go. And Athlone came away with a point. There was some great goals in this one. Desmond scored a cracker for Cove. Perrault, again, he's one of these strikers that he's more dangerous when he's back to goal than when he's facing it. He got the ball, he gets on the spin, and he buries it. We've seen him do that so many times, including against Longford. Drynan put Cove 2-1 up, but then Lille got an equaliser for Athlone. That just about keeps them in the playoff places. Cove slipped down to fourth, but they'll generally still be happy with the season they're having.
Oh, they will, yeah, compared to last season. But I think a lot of credit has to go to the boy Keegan. He's done a great job so far. He's made a lot of changes. And he's getting a great return on it, so you know you have to give him credit. We dig out plenty of people on the podcast, so I think it's time to, you know, give credit where it's due.
And they're missing their main man at the minute as well. So
who?
Jack Doherty.
Oh, you know, yeah, absolutely.
Good lock of weeks now.
Yeah,
they'll of course they'll be disappointed with the manner of the Athlone second equaliser, though, won't they? Lee Stacey's had one there, unfortunately.
He has a bit of a howler there, unfortunately. Look, but that, you know, that's what's going to happen. You're going to have these unfortunate incidents when, you know, you're the keeper. You're the boy that if you make a mistake, the team feels it the most. So, you know, if I make a mistake as a striker, if I miss it, I'm going to get another goal. Like, no one's going to start hammering me that as badly. So, well, maybe they would. I make plenty of mistakes in the podcast, but I get dug out enough. But, yeah, look, these things happen. Lee has had long enough. I don't think it'll impact him that greatly.
Yeah. Harps 0, Waterford 4. You got this one spot on. You went 4-0, so well done. Parsons, Coughlin with 2, McMenemy with 1, and McCallum was sent off when it was 2-0 to Waterford just to compound their misery. So another heavy defeat for Harps. Probably what we expected, but looking back at some of the highlights now, the highlights did miss a couple of goals, unfortunately, but from what we're hearing... From what we're hearing, Pixelot might be coming towards its end in the first division, which is good to hear. But what was I going to say? Sorry, just it was so easy for Waterford. I know this is the result we all expected, but again, it reminded me of bits of the Longford-Wexford game where just a ball into the middle and a man could pick his head up and he had all the time in the world to do whatever he wanted for Waterford.
Yeah, I think that's the concern that we had before the game. Like, we didn't have any fear that Waterford weren't going to win this game comfortably. I think we all said either 2-0 or 3-0 or 4-0.
I went 6.
Did you?
I did.
Oh, yeah, you get. Oh, you know nothing about it, lad. But no, you know what I mean? Like there's... It's unfortunate, but that's just the way and the place.
I know we said, we've been saying that the last few weeks, look, this is where Harps are, but at the same time, you can't make it that easy for the opposition either. And I know they're down to 10 men then, and it's next to impossible. But yeah, they need to try. And I'm going back and repeating myself from a few weeks ago. Longford earlier in the season had a difficult start, decided, right, let's make ourselves hard to beat first and foremost, and then we can start thinking about building attacking plays.
And maybe scoring a few goals.
Yeah. And they're slowly getting there, thank God. But Harps, they're just easy to play against. And they haven't made themselves hard to play against.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's... I know. Well, then, if that's the case, then so like we'll say it's probably fair to say that Harps and Longford are in a similar vein at the moment, club wise.
Yeah,
rebuilding, looking to new squad, recently players, relegated, blah, blah,
managers,
blah,
yeah,
all the rest of it. How come? Like I'd say Longford are having a better season than Harps are.
Yeah, well, now look, there's very little between them in the table, and Longford have played Harps twice and haven't beaten them twice, but I think I'd be happier with what I've seen from Longford than I have from Harps. I mean, we've touched on it before. Harps' defensive record is absolutely atrocious.
Like, Longford have the third best defensive record in the division.
This is what I mean. They've made themselves hard to beat, despite the fact maybe they haven't got the resources that they would like and maybe the sort of resources they've had in years gone by, but they're digging in and they're trying their best. I'm not saying the Harps players aren't, but I think they need to maybe look at a system there that is just going to go back to basics for a little while.
The
thing is, Longford did that early in the season, whereas we're a third into the season now. If Harps do that now, are they kind of writing off the rest of the season?
Yeah, but what's the alternative? Lose like this for the rest of it? You know what I mean? Like it's no addition. So I think they need to do something because it's not working, and heavy defeats like this. I know it's only 4-0, it's not 9-0 like what poor old Kerry suffered earlier on the season, but this is not good. And this is in Finn Park as well, so yeah, it's not great.
Right, let's move. On Waterford, obviously I don't know what much we can add to this conversation, Gary, but there'll be great concern amongst their fans, obviously. Andy Pilley, he's been found guilty on fraud charges in the UK. And I believe the judge has indicated that a prison sentence is probably quite likely. It's worrying for Waterford. I know they were quick to release a statement and say it's business as usual. I think Fleetwood did the same, obviously, the other club that he owns as well. But, you know, Waterford, just when it looks like things are going right, again, they're in kind of the headlines. I wouldn't say for the wrong reason, but they're thinking about the future of the club again now. When they thought that they had a really good owner here, and that's not to say that he's not a good owner, but you know, it's just a negative story they really could have done without.
No, without question. I just think it's unfortunate that this has occurred, but like, look, it's for the club. Like if Andy Pilley's been found guilty, so that has obviously ramifications for him and all his businesses, his clubs, and you know, the staff working for him. So it's not great, certainly from a Waterford perspective, just taking that part of it. They've had interesting owners, let's say,
the years. That's what I mean. They thought
the fairest way to describe it.
They thought they were kind of plain sailing here, but not the case. I just, from a players and a staff point of view, do you think this is going to be in their minds at all? Is this a distraction?
No, I don't believe so at all. I think probably, like, how often was Andy Pilley there? Like, obviously, I'm just guessing, but like, was he over that often? Was he in Rooting that often? You know, I'm not sure would they have much. It's nothing to do with them, really. I don't believe. I think maybe the Jonathan Walters piece is a bit interesting. That kind of all happened around the same. Same time. But you know, like Jonathan Walters, I haven't heard him get a new job since. So, or has he? Have you heard that like that?
No, there's rumors he's been lined up for a role in the FAI. That's a rumor I've seen online. I think his name was maybe slightly attached to that Patch job as well. So who knows where he'll rock up next. But
he didn't leave a Monday to start a new job on a Tuesday. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Like, let's hope it all works out okay for Waterford, because they have gone through a lot over the last few years with owners, as you said.
Oh, of course, we don't want to see a club go under, particularly for something like this. But I think, you know, we talked before about, like, what is Waterford? What's the asset? Do Waterford have any assets? But they don't have a ground or anything. Do you know what I mean? Like, even, and that was a part of the discussion when Andy Pilley was buying the club last year.
Yeah,
that. What exactly is he buying?
A badge.
essentially, you know, on a lease on a ground.
Mm.
So it's difficult to see, you know, what assets. If I was going to come in on a bag of money and I was told this is the price, I was like, okay, well, what am I getting for this?
Mm.
Not a bag of stuff, really. So hopefully, one thing I'd like to, you know, and I said this at the time as well when Pilley bought it, hopefully this is the start of like a long-term relationship. It's not even a year under his ownership that we're already looking at this. Hopefully it's not, you know, a big thing.
Yeah, okay. Right, Kerry nil, Bray 2. Disappointing that Kerry couldn't build on their great win last week. An important win for Bray, because they haven't exactly been motoring along that greatly. But a 2-0 win here. Groom and Feeney with goals. There was a penalty. What did you make of the penalty handball? It was borderline, wasn't it?
Look, I said I'm not going to make too much of a comment on. There's been a lot of talk about handballs and stuff. There's another handball in the treaty game, I think it was. Did you see that?
Yeah, but it was very hard.
Eagle eyes on the ref. So I think a lot of there's been a lot of shouting for handball.
Yeah.
When it's not, like, you know,
it goes back to our discussion last week about conning referees, I suppose, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. It's brutal, though. It's brutal. But yeah, look, without getting into the wider whole thing, look, it's a penalty, it's tough on Kerry, but I don't want to get too deep in the referees all over again. I think, the bigger piece for me is that Kerry couldn't capitalize on the win and, you know, at least get a point at home, because they have been difficult to play against and they have been difficult to break down at times. Like, we saw that with Longford a couple of weeks ago down in Kerry. So to see that they couldn't get something out of the game, and I think this is the first one of four home games in five as well that they couldn't start it off on a positive, getting another point at the board. But
well, look, I know we've got a good lock of Kerry listeners these days, so the good news I can give them is that they're at home to Wexford next, so there's a good opportunity there to get something. Let's move along, and the Terminator in the First Division, that's, of course, Galway. Another win, 3-0 away to Treaty. Another penalty for Hurley. I'll have to check how many penalties he scored this season. They've had a ridiculous amount of penalties, but as, of course, because they spend so much time in the other half. Lombotto with a goal, and Keita with a goal, and Spain was sent off for Treaty, who seem to be having a bit of a discipline problem lately, Gary.
Absolutely, yeah.
Did he get the stick out, Tommy?
Yeah, bait them down. Look, I think...
Or he just needs to do with Tommy Shelby, get them round. No fighting.
Yeah, well, let's say he was saying that the whole way home from Bishopsgate a couple of weeks ago. But I think there'd be... You know, even listening to end of last week, you know, they were looking for a positive result. I never saw it for a second. Even after they bet Longford 3-0, I just could not see Galway not winning that game.
Mm.
There were...
Well, some of the defending was poor here, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. Like, Lombotto must have had 10 minutes to slot that in at the back.
But I suggested it to you last week and you weren't really sure. But again, looking at this game, I mean, Treaty playing so well the last few weeks, four wins on the spin, and then they go in here... And the goals they concede, I look at that, and to me, they're almost beaten before they go on the pitch.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't think, if Tommy's listening to this, which I know you do, Tommy, fair play to you, he definitely won't agree with me. You know, the players won't agree. They'll say they go out to win every game or to get something out of every game. But I think, subconsciously, I think a lot of teams that are going up against Galway, they're going up against Waterford, and they're very fearful of this happening before they even take the pitch.
I think so. Well, like, how come Longford didn't do that? How come they beat Galway?
They have to lose a game somewhere along the line.
Yeah, but how
and to be fair, on another day, you know, Galway had chances that day. On another day, do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, but they were comically bad for the goal that day.
Yeah,
and you know, Longford needed that obviously to come out on the right side of that one. But you know, you need to be looking at like, and I do appreciate like Tritty were on such a nice little run. They were confident and cut good few clean sheets in this little run as well. They were very good against Longford. Some of the best football we've seen this season. Yeah. I think you have a fair point, though, that there's like this inevitability about losing against Galway or Waterford at the moment amongst a lot of teams. And
I mean, like, lads had so many swipes at the ball before they put it in the net. And we said that recently. wasn't it? Cove against, was it Waterford or Galway recently? Where the goals, again, they were like slow motion and there was like lads lining up to put it in the net. And there's no belief in the defending here.
Yeah, it's something, I don't know what it is. It's odd in a way. It's like a cloud comes into the brains of a lot of teams that play Galway and Waterford at the minute, but particularly Galway. They've been so clinical in so many games. But like the defending, again, big question mark over some of the goals. Like, whatever about the handball. Was it even a handball? Like, I didn't even see the ref.
I couldn't really see it. I couldn't.
Yeah, it's just next to there's a penalty. So, look, that happens. That's difficult to put. Makes your job an awful lot harder when you give away a penalty. But, like, something that offended for the rest of it was just not good enough and not something that we were expecting to see from Treat in the last few weeks.
Right, let's move on to the Predictions League. And it wasn't a great week for us last week. You're still top, Gary. We both got 5 points last week, so you are still 1 point clear at the top. But our listener last week that took part, that was Adam Doyle from Derry. And he outscored us by 8 points to 5. So well done to Adam for that. We've got another listener joining us this week. It's Johnny Magner, a Cork City fan. I see he's into his horse racing. And with the last name Magner, I'm starting to wonder if he's connected to the boys. He might have a few pounds. But let's see how he gets on here in the Predictions League. We'll start with Galway against Athlone Town.
Yeah, no, another run-of-the-mill performance. One question I want to ask you. Is it going to become difficult for Galway to start? Like, is there going to be a motivation issue?
No.
We'll say no.
No.
Why is
that? Not until they're promoted. They've gone through enough pain and suffering over the last few years. I don't think they're going to stop.
Okay.
Here's a flip question for you. Athlone.
Yeah. Right.
Where are they going right now? Clearly got some really nice players.
Yeah.
Results have slowed down a little bit, but they're still doing okay compared to other years. But with all this bullshit going on off the pitch,
yeah,
is it just going to fall apart? Or have they got the players to...
Is that not a concern with Galway all the time? Or not with Athlone?
Of course it is, yeah.
Yeah.
They're an absolute basket case. And they have been for the last probably best part of a decade.
Yeah. That's true. Even since probably, if you look 10 years ago, Roddy was knocking around. Yeah, that's fair.
They can't be hammered enough about what's going on there.
What is good? Like, what else is wrong? Like, you mentioned that they're not talking to the fans or whatever, and that's fine. But what else is there?
They have little to no support from their own town.
Yeah, but that has been the case for the last 15 or not 15.
And what are they doing to resolve
10
it?
10 years.
Radio silence. It's crazy.
Yeah. Okay. No, I'm not saying you're wrong.
We had this discussion a good while ago, maybe a season or two ago. We were talking about Athlone. I think they had a manager in there that was doing okay and he left. And I remember me and you saying, they just need to totally forget about on the pitch. Well, not totally forget, but like their main focus for the next 5 years should be off the pitch. But instead, they're bringing in players from all over the place. Now, they brought in some very good players. Perrott is top class. I'd love to see him go elsewhere. But the club is going nowhere the way it's been ran, in my eyes.
Yeah, no, that I don't dispute that. I think it's going to... One main this Vallejo football involvement. I always have this feeling. This has been the case the last few forays that other people have had into Athlone. There's always been a temporariness to it. There's always been like a fly by night. These boys will be gone tomorrow, and there'll be probably the same group of lads knocking around to fix it all when it's all said and done. I don't really know. Like, that's why I'm not that, you know, crazy about it. The way you are, the way you were speaking just there.
Well, I'm the only positive I can see at the moment is the players that are coming in do seem to be of a very good quality. But as you said, how long will this last?
Well, that's the thing. But like, there's no point in like, you know, losing the rag over it because these lads could be gone by in September.
I mean, Longford Town have been hammered at times locally now. I think we've always dispelled it as a bit of a nonsense argument that there's not enough local players. I don't buy that at all. But
yeah,
there was one. This must be the first time ever in League of Ireland. There was one Irish-born player in the starting 11 for Athlone the other day. It's mad to see. And really? I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but at the same time, you're trying to get people on side. Like, what attachment is there if you're not already associated with Athlone Town? What is there to draw you out there to a game right now?
Very little. Very little. I think you have to be really enjoying your football to go out to. Some of that, because you don't have a connection with the club. And that's something that has been, unfortunately, been brewing for a good little while. And it's harder to fix. It's also more difficult when, you know, bear in mind, like, there was a year and a half of COVID or whatever. I'm not blaming COVID. Everybody was the same. But if you're already at a low base, you're bet down another bit because of COVID as well.
Yeah, so, everyone else has come out of COVID, you know, booming, and Athlone are one of the few clubs that haven't. So, look, we've spent enough time on that now. Let's get a prediction here. Galway, Athlone.
3-0 Galway.
3-0 Galway. I'm going to go... I got 3-1 Galway. And let me see, Johnny, what did he send over to us? Do you have Johnny's predictions there in front of you?
I do.
I did send them to you. I didn't write them down, of course.
Galway and Athlone, he also goes 3-1. So you're pretending that you didn't see this.
I literally just loaded it up on my phone there now, but I have them here, okay. Right? So, right, let's move on. Treaty against Harps. Treaty, obviously, be disappointed with the way they played against Galway, but at the same time, that's not the type of game that's going to define their season. The games against Longford, they won both of them. Games of teams of the similar level, they're the important games Treaty need to target. They're at home here against a Harps team that have been dreadful so far this season. If Treaty weren't to win this one, I think they'd be looking at it and going, oh, Jesus, what was that all for the last few weeks? No, we spoke about Longford a little bit when they lost the game to Treaty. They had a little mini run before that, and we said, Jesus, is this another false dawn? And I think if Treaty don't win this, they'll be looking at, and they'll be probably having the same conversations among themselves as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's always going to be a case for that. But I think in this area of the table, where we kind of expect all of these clubs to be in at the moment, you're going to have a lot of false dawns, which you kind of have to not call them false dawns.
Yeah, everyone's taking points off each other in the first division.
Exactly, and there's a really good performance and a clean sheet and 3 goals like Longford had against Wexford. And then they could go out and get pumped asunder by Waterford.
Yeah,
so which is very viable. I think for this one though, I can only see a Treaty win. I think they're clean sheets. They've had a few of those this season.
No, they've not had enough. I think they've been very poor defensively. I don't know how many clean sheets they've had, but
I think recently in this little recent run, they've had a few.
They've conceded 22 and 15. It's not that minus one is their goal difference. It's not actually that bad. Particularly in this season's first division. Like, I mean, there's teams with some absolutely dreadful goal differences there. So to be minus one isn't actually that bad. So,
yeah, I'm going to go 2-0 Treaty.
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-1 to Treaty. I'm still concerned about some of the goals they're conceding. So I think Harps might get something in terms of a goal, but I can only see Treaty with
penalty.
the way Harps are defending, the likes of Curran there could have a field day. So I go 2-1 Treaty.
Fill your boots, end up.
Johnny, he goes 2-0 to Treaty. So you're matching Johnny there. Right, Kerry against Wexford. I think I'll take the lead on this one, Gaz.
Oh, Elliot.
I was very, very critical of Wexford earlier in the show. And I think when we were leaving the ground the other day, a few Wexford fans said to us, there's every chance Kerry will beat us next week playing like this. I think this is a great opportunity for Kerry. I'm going to go with a 1-0 win for the team same. From the kingdom. You're going the same, are you?
Yeah. I think, apart from the stuff on the pitch, the dugout was very concerning.
Yeah.
The no interactions. Like I would say, I think the biggest interaction that was had, I think Ethan Boyle was doing a bit of John. Even at one point,
he got absolutely bullied, though, didn't he, Boyle?
Made
an negative.
Totally.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you remember this. It was in the first half. Yeah, no, sorry, it was in the second half. Boyle had picked up a bit of a knock.
Mm. Yeah.
And some of the staff were asking if he was all right, and he was just ignoring them.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as if you couldn't hear it. Like, the ground was very quiet on Friday. And then eventually he answered. But it was just like, right, okay, this isn't a great place to be at the minute. And Whitmarsh, he made mincemeat of the whole back four. For a lad that hasn't played that often this season, just want to highlight him again. Really clever opening goal, really nice finish. Jamal Ibrahim made mincemeat of the whole lot. No wonder, I thought Reese Webb.
Did very well, and yeah, Webb got took off at half time. He was absolutely destroyed by.
I thought he'd have to be taken for, to be looked at at half time. He was that bad.
What I was going to say though, the third goal for Longford, where Jamal it was very like the Adam O'Reilly assist for Derry.
It was
just allowed to walk by lads and do what he wanted. Picked his head up. Will I pass it to him? No, I'll carry it another little bit. Now I'll pass it and bang. Whitmarsh bangs in the second goal of the game, but that was the goal where I looked at you and I was like, Jesus, Wexford have problems here, big ones.
Yeah, they are poison. Yeah, no question about it. And even just on a small point, I want to highlight Ross Fay. For a player that hasn't played that often this season for Longford Town, he was let run a lot of the midfield, which was really concerning from a Wexford.
Now, to take nothing away from Ross, you're right, he was brilliant, but again, anytime the ball... There was no press applied by Wexford.
So
once Longford passed it out from the back and were into the midfield, they were literally at Wexford. That was it. There was no midfield. I don't know where the Wexford midfield was. But it wasn't there, and Faye absolutely reveled in that. So yeah, look, we both go 1-0 Kerry, and Johnny goes 1-1 in the game. So nobody expected Wexford to win, which is probably an indictment of where their season is at the moment. Bray against Cove. This is a big one. Third against fourth.
Yeah, this is interesting. Only a point in it in the table, but I think Bray have won their last couple. I know there were one of them was against Kerry, but a home game here. I know Cove are doing okay based on where they're
from. The other win was against Harps.
Still though.
I think we've seen Shane Keegan. He's shown the ability this season. Certain games, he'll set up a different way. I think he did that when he came to Longford. Now, it wasn't a great advert for the game, but they set up to get something out of the game. Yeah. They got something. I think he might do similar here. I'm going to go 0-0.
Yeah, I'm going between 1-1 and 0-0.
Well, Johnny's gone 1-1. I've gone 0-0. So who are you following?
I follow you.
Hey, yep. Oh. Right. Final game to preview in the First Division before we move on to the Premier Division games. That is the game that we'll
be at.
The big one. Longford Town against Waterford.
Longford had a great result down in the RSC earlier on this season.
That was obviously Danny C. Earl's Waterford, but still, all the same.
It was a lifetime ago. My God, that was the 24th of February or something like that. My God. We haven't seen Waterford in quite a while, and thank God, because they've been going quite well. But I think Longford can get something out of this one.
Yeah.
I'd love if some of Longford players came back from injury, which would be
the difference of settled back four made the other night was huge, though, wasn't it? Now it was still not a traditional back four because Victor was playing centre back again when he's more of a midfielder, but he was brilliant. He's so good at it.
Oh, he's unbelievable.
Keane Byrne has been tremendous since he signed. He was brilliant again the other night. And then you've got your two fullbacks, Elworthy and young Kyle O'Connor, who was brilliant the other night as well. So that made a big difference compared to the back four that lined up against Treaty. So I think if Longford can keep a solid back four, they'll have A. Dervin coming back from suspension for this game as well. He'll give them a good shield. So I think they can do similar to what they did in the RSC. The only thing, I spoke to Hendo after the game the other night for the local radio, and he said that he now feels that they have the players and that they have that bit more about them, that they can offer a bit more as well. He obviously said they will have to play differently against Waterford than they did against Wexford. So I think that suggests, you know, they'll set up defensively, low block, and play on the counter. But I think they will have that bit more on the counter than maybe they did earlier in the season. So I do think Longford can get something from the game. But I have noticed a good trend developing of late that whenever I predict Longford to lose, they get something, they win. I did that last week. I'm going to do the same here. 2-1 to Waterford. Right, I think Longford can get something from the game. But I'm doing this out of goodness, not badness.
1-0 Town. Benny and O'Brien Whitmarsh is going to get another.
Lovely. And Johnny goes for a 2-0 win to Waterford. Stick to the horses, Johnny. Right, let's go to the Premier Division. I might head over to this one on Friday. I haven't fully decided what I'm doing Friday night yet, but Drogheda are taking on UCD, and you know, after beating Shamrock Rovers, it will be absolutely no good to Drogheda if they don't capitalise and beat UCD.
Yeah, you have to keep it lit, keep it going. You can't not win this game at home. It'd be an awful, awful way to follow up that great result last week in Tala. They have to be clinical and not let UCD into the game at all. They have to start out with the blocks quick here. I think they can do it. I'm going to go 2-1 to Drogheda.
Okay, I'm going to go 3-1 to Drogheda. I just think with the confidence running through the team now after that, that they might have a good day. Freddie Draper now started to find the back of the net. Took him a while. He was playing very well. He's a bit like Drogheda, playing well, maybe not getting the rewards. Hopefully he's going to start getting rewards now over the next few weeks. I got 3-1 to Drogheda, and Johnny, he goes 1-1 here. I think UCD can get something out of this one. Right, Bows against Shells, another Dublin derby.
He's hopeful. He's a Cork man, you said. Isn't he?
He is a Cork man, yeah.
Yeah, he's just hoping that.
Yeah, that's a good one, all right.
Yeah.
Right, Bows Shells. This is live, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, based, is it?
I think it is, yeah.
Based on, you know, there's an interesting piece here between Bows' hardiness, to come back.
And maybe getting stuff out of games that they shouldn't have got much out of, and where Shell's games where they probably should have got something, haven't got something. So, yeah, that's a fair point.
It is, but not... I'm concerned with Bows and their... somewhat frailty at the back.
Are they fizzling out a little bit? 3 without a win now.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a tough one here. Shell's better than the reverse of this as well. I'm going to go 1-1 here.
I'm going 0-0. I think a Duffer masterclass coming here. And Johnny goes 2-1 to Bowes, so he keeps faith with Declan Devine's side. As for Johnny's team, they take on Shamrock Rovers on Friday night down in Turner's Cross.
Yeah, I'm just looking at Johnny's prediction here, 2-2. I think Cork are in an awful...
It was 4-4 in the reverse fixtures. That's not actually crazy.
Yeah. Okay, we moved on a good bit since then. There's a lot of football being played.
As we said, Cork, I wouldn't say turned a corner in the last few weeks. There's been some signs of positivity, a bit more attack and play. This is going to be a backs-to-the-walls job. I'd have to go for a Shamrock Rovers
win. Their first win in 6, isn't it? Or 7?
They should have got something in Oriel the week before. The red cards are going to start killing them.
Yeah, of course they are. But yeah, no. Rovers here, an absolute walk in the park, 2-0.
I'll go 2-1 to Shamrock Rovers, but I do think that them suspensions are really going to start hurting Cork. And what did Johnny go? He goes 2-2 in that one. Fair play to him. Right. Hats against Dundalk. Like this is the other game I'm half thinking of going to on Friday. John Daly's first game in charge, and it just happens to be against Stephen O'Donnell's Dundalk.
Yeah, she'd probably get a lift with Stephen, would you? Yep. Yes. First game that John Daly would be the man at the helm.
The boss man.
Fully the boss man, the gaffer. I'm leaning towards Johnny's prediction here, 3-1 to Pats. I think that's a very... I'm not impressed with Dundalk. I think some of the defensive crap that they've been putting out has been just dire. And even when you look at like results like, or you know, how they performed in the second half last week against Bowes, half of it didn't come out of the dressing room at all. And you know, even with the last gasp winner against Cork, you'd imagine that would have, you know, given them a bit of life, a bit of, you know, excitement or whatever. And then 2-0 up, and then they fill the togs good and full. Disappointing from a Dundalk perspective, but O'Donnell, he seems to have a big job on his plate to get a bit of consistency in the side, and I don't think he's going to get any more here against Pats. I'm going to go 2-0 Pats.
Okay, I mean, if John Daly wants to get off to a quick start and get the fans on side, there'd be no better way to do it than giving Dundalk a right pumping.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you could give anybody a pump around, they'd come on side. Of course I would, but particularly Dundalk is a nice extra piece.
So Johnny goes 3-1, you're going 2-0. I think you've talked me around to it, lads, to be honest. I'm going to go 2-1 to Pats. I definitely don't see Dundalk winning the game. I might have been leaning the way of a draw, but both of you there have talked me into it, so I'll go 2-1 Pats. Right, Sligo Rovers against Derry City.
Oh, walk in the park.
I would say Sligo need a response, but as you said last week, they've been looking for a response for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
This is a bigger game, probably from a Derry point of view.
100%. Yeah, I'm glad you said that. Derry have to be looking at these boys as nothing.
Yeah.
I'm not saying don't, you know, give them the respect that you need to beat these and that and do that. Don't be acting complacent or anything like that. But these Sligo won't. I don't think they're. I'm so tired of Sligo. It's not even funny. 3-1 Derry.
Okay. I go 2-1 Derry. I just think Michael Duffy is in too good a form. I think Ryan Graydon is in good form.
They're going to rip these boys apart as if they're not there.
Using the cliche again, the showgrounds is a difficult place to go of a Saturday night. I think I don't know. I'm just saying it now. Look, I'm going for a Derry win 2-1, but this is a good test of Derry.
No, it's not. No.
What does Johnny go here?
2-0 to Derry. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Can you make any case for Sligo getting a point out of this game? Apart from Derry being crap, or have thrown in one of their. Oh, we made 1,400 passes all around our own box, and we had three shots.
Yeah, I'm probably looking at this game in terms of if Derry turn up, they win, and that's that.
Yeah, that's desperate. That's desperate. As I said earlier on, please, Sligo fans, I'd love to hear more from you if you even still listen to this podcast anymore after me digging you out for the last couple of years. But like, surely to God, there's someone that goes, "Yes, Gary, you're right. We're not doing that." Or equally, Gary, you're an ego and we're doing all this stuff and we're so good, blah blah blah. I'd love to hear both.
Yeah, look, that's the Premier Division predictions. Any closing points for this week's pod, Gary? A little bit shorter than usual, as I said, with so many different topics to discuss there, particularly the First Division, we just didn't have time to get any guests lined up this week, but we'll certainly get that sorted again for next week. I think we've been, without patting ourselves on the back too much, I think we've been knocking out of the park the last few weeks with some of the guests we've had on here.
Yeah, absolutely, and we are working on a couple of nice big ones over the next few weeks.
Always are,
but yeah, no, we have a couple of big names. I think has one ever been brand new to interviews like this? Anyway, I hope.
I think so. Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, it would be good to hear from them. I think there's been a lot of I think the point that you were starting on about the Pixelot thing And probably more news to come out about streaming and what that's going to look like over the next couple of years. Going to be a lot of interesting comments to be made about that, I think, particularly as a LOI TV producer at the minute. How that's going to look over the next few years and what type of product we're going to have on show will be I'm not going to say a hot topic, but probably will be, considering a lot of first division clubs are doing, like even Treaty coming into it now, doing a bit of their streaming themselves. So I think there's a bit of talking that needs to be done from an FAI perspective as regards getting rid of Pixelot, but also bringing those clubs along as well. So that'll be a topic that we'll be talking about over the next few months. But also, yeah, I don't know, I think that's one of the big ones. Of course, we need to talk at some point. We need to get someone on about the old bookies tax and the nags.
Yeah, so look, I've been working hard behind the scenes on that, and I'm getting it very, very difficult to get anyone on the horse racing side of things that wants to come on and discuss it.
I say Gordon Elliott, lad, he'll definitely come on.
Obviously, look, I'm in a situation where I suppose I've got a foot in both camps. I obviously am hugely passionate about League of Ireland, but I also have a huge interest in horse racing and work within the gambling industry, so I can see both sides of the coin. But I fully believe that other sports should get a cut of the betting levy. I think an argument that has been made by certain people is that, I heard one point been made, that League of Ireland turns over less than 1% of bookmakers' revenue, so why should they get anything? If someone goes into an Irish bookmaker shop and has a bet on the 2:15 at Lingfield, that goes into the levy.
Yeah.
So
Lingfield, is that even a real place, is it?
Why should HRI and the IHRB, why should they get all of the cut? If that's the attitude we're going to take, then why is it not only Irish racing that contributes to the levy? So that's a nonsensical argument from the get-go. So Look, this is the kind of questions I'd like to put to people that have been very adamant that the FAI and other sports deserve absolutely nothing from it. I have spoke to other people within the horse racing industry that have said themselves they fully agree that it's only right that other sports get a cut, but now they're not willing to come on here and say that. That's fair enough. I don't know where I was going with that, but anyway, I'll let you in there now.
No, I was, because I did take some time to read that report that came out from the HRI last week, and there's been a couple of jibber jabbers about it online. And the point I made to a friend of mine was that, like, even, you know, horse racing Ireland or horse racing in Ireland contributes to, you know, 30,000 jobs, and they're even including jobs in the head offices of bookies. So you're telling me that a lad who, you know, cleans the floor is there thanks to some lad running a horse in in Kildare or somewhere. I don't even know where horse race courses are in Ireland. But do you know what I mean? Like, is this the mental gymnastics that we're gonna do? And I know, I appreciate it's a industry report to say how great the industry is. It's very easy to make that up as you go along. But like, even a small scratch on the surface shows it down to be pure tripe.
Well, I wouldn't say pure tripe. I do personally believe, and I think there is enough figures out there, and enough that the horse racing is a huge contributor to the economy. But I would agree that there's a lot of beefed up stuff in that report. That certainly seems to be the case. But again, going back to what we discussed previously, I just think there's not that lobbying power there within Irish football. Like, why is this not front and center this week? Why are we not able to scratch the surface? Why are we not able to keep this in the media news cycle? I'm still hearing more about GA Go, you know what I mean? A total non-issue. So it just goes to show we just still don't have that lobbying or political weight behind us to be able to really get what we deserve, in my opinion.
Yeah, and look, I think the football, and it's down to a very small group of people, have unfortunately made it to be a very difficult starting point for the, I was going to say, the new FAI or FAI 2.0. I think it's FAI 1.05 is what we're at the minute. It's put him in a very difficult position, a negative starting point. But I think that's the coming time when that has to be shaken off and we have to look to the future and we can't be going, oh, yeah, John Delaney this and John Delaney that.
Well, we hear more about good old JD now, isn't champagne football getting turned into a TV it series?
Is. Yeah, champagne football is right. Congratulations to Mark Tighe and Paul Rowan for that. I did actually say, now, I was having a few shandies the other night and we were talking about the FAI and football and blah, blah, blah. Are we much better off? Well, we've kind of said this a few times before, and I said to my friend, he knows Mark Tighe, and I was like, I wish Mark Tighe never published that article. You know, why are we here? And I think when you look back on it now, you know, it's 2023 now, and all of that came out in 2019.
How much have we kicked on?
Well, apart from that, yeah, I think there was such an initial, oh, geez, this is terrible. You know, but we all knew it. Like, particularly League of Ireland fans been jawing about John Delaney for since God was a gossin. And now we're looking at it and there was a lot of like, oh, this is going to be great. We're going to have a new FAI and it's going to be ran right and treated right and blah, blah, blah. But we haven't actually seen much in that line. And even, you know, we say that we need to be talking about it more, but like Jonathan Hill was brought in to bring in a new sponsor, and here we are, three years later, 2 years later, however long he's in the gig, and we're no further along there. So
look, we could probably dedicate a whole episode to the FAI, but a couple of listeners' questions before we go. Aaron Flaherty, good Longford Town man.
Bye, Flat.
With all the talk over the last few weeks about having games on telly and the uproar caused by some GAA fans regarding GAA matches, would moving back to a winter league get more games on telly because there is no GAA? I appreciate where Aaron's coming from, but I think that's a total non-runner. I think summer football has been a big improvement. The pitches are better. It's more family friendly. I know we can have a bit of a lull in the summertime when it's going up against the GAA Championship and against maybe other major sporting tournaments that are going on in the summer. But I think overall, the Summer League, I couldn't really imagine. You know, we have enough miserable nights standing, even in pre-season, standing in an outcourt field a February night. I couldn't really imagine doing that for a full year. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I see where he's coming from, and it is a fair point. But if you imagine, like, I will say one thing, it was very easy on Friday, you know, for us knocking around. You know, we're all in good form anyway, even before the game. But then, particularly after the game, you know, it was a great day, lovely, warm. We're on the way to getting the kebab, 3 points in the pocket. Imagine if it was driven rain into your face. Yeah, yeah. It wouldn't have just been as nice. So I think
as well, again, I can see Aaron's point here totally, but more games on telly is obviously what we all want. But again, we go back to the other side of the argument. Then when we do get more games on telly and we've seen Virgin enter the fold now, we start to look forward again then and say, right, more games on telly, but what is this actually getting us? Is this helping the league grow? Is it helping the profile? Should we be looking for financial reward here? You know, we keep saying that we need a proper TV deal. I don't know, will it ever happen? How beneficial is more games on TV? Is it the be all and end all for the league?
I can't really see it being the case, really.
No. I mean, we're two huge League of Ireland men. When was the last time you watched a game on telly? You're at a game every Friday night. I don't
probably go for a game. I think the bank holiday, maybe. Sometimes now, to be fair, we'd be a cranky, miserable man. So sometimes I do get a pain in my arse.
Yeah, but that's generally watch our LOI TV you're watching, is it?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember the last time I watched a game on RT2. But you see, most of the time you wouldn't even know it was on RT2. That's the other thing. You know, next year you're flicking around and you're waiting for the game to start at 7:45 to turn on LOI TV, and then you look, oh jeez, there's Alan Colley and some other chap talking about some game that's on tonight and you didn't even know about. So I don't know. I think I don't want to talk about RTE though. I know that for a fact.
Forever a youth. Can we talk about how shit Wexford have been?
Yes, we can.
How they need to sack the manager. I think we've already discussed Wexford in depth, so I'm sure Forever a Youth has enjoyed this evening's podcast.
I will say the lad roaring about boxing them in. He needs to go back to manager school or coaching school. Box them in. Imagine getting up out of your seat for that to be the first thing you roar down the line. Box them in.
Mm.
Jeez, if I heard that an under-20s match, I'd be annoyed.
Now, this isn't a question, but we got a tweet earlier on from a Twitter account called Foreign League of Ireland Supporter. And he is what he claims to be. He's an overseas League of Ireland fan. He said he's become a lot more involved in the League of Ireland since streaming became a thing. And he said he listens to this podcast every week, which is great. So I just wanted to give that that man a shout out on the show. And Adam Doyle, who played us recently in the Predictions League last week, he has a question for this week's show. What do you think the chances of James McLean coming back to Derry? Do you see players such as Cotter and Kelly coming back to the League of Ireland due to the lack of game time? And maybe Burns and Davoy, as they were both relegated to League 2 with MK Dons and neither really made an impact there, says Adam. I suppose we'll start with James McLean. He's getting ever closer to that 100th cap for Ireland. He's been a fantastic servant for his country, as we all know. He's well deserving of it. I just wonder until
he's deserving of 100 caps, though.
Yeah. Like, look, I know.
Should he have, you know, had 85?
Yeah. I get where you're coming from, but nobody can question his commitment to his country. What I was going to say is, will he stay in England? I wonder until he gets the 100 caps. I mean, if he comes home to the League of Ireland, would that be the end of his international career? Do you think Kenny will always keep him around the squad just because of the character he is and his stature and respect he has within the camp?
Look, I think if James Talbot is getting into a training squad, then James McLean can play for Ireland for the next 20 years. I think that says it all.
That's only a training squad, though. It's a big difference.
I think that copper fastens my point, actually. James Talbot shouldn't be anywhere near that squad. He shouldn't even know where that training camp is going on. Never mind being in it. Sorry.
Do you think McLean will come home?
Probably at some point. I don't know if it'll be this season. Maybe. Could be. I'd say if he's trying to be cute about how many caps does he have? If we're just talking about caps.
90-something. He's not far away. Like.
Right. So he might say hang around somewhere until Christmas.
He was very good for Wigan this season. He was very, very good for Wigan this season. I think he'd stay there only for maybe the financial situation. They might still find a way to keep him. But I think he still probably has enough in the tank to give another one, at least one good season of English football anyway. I think he'll stay there. Just on them other players he mentions, do you think the League of Ireland is now attractive enough for players like that to come back over? Or does it simply come down to finances? Those players are on better bread across the water.
Far better bread. Like I'd say, if they came back, like, they'd probably have to take a significant pay cut, unless probably only Rovers and Derry could they even compete? Not really sure. Like, what's a League 2 wage?
There was a thing out there before where average wages was significantly higher in the League of Ireland anyway. So.
There you go. So, you know, like even a player that's on the fringes but, you know, is playing well in training or whatever, even like someone like Dawson Devoy, are they going to be that excited about coming back home? Because no matter what way you cut it, there's a failure hat that people play some people that come back. And I wouldn't really look at it like that.
And I think a lot of players from years ago will admit they stayed in England and pottered around old clubs that no one had heard of.
Frickin'.
Just because they didn't want to come home and be labelled a failure. And they probably admit that was the wrong thing to do now, but maybe the league wasn't as strong as it is now. So, look, be interesting to see. Just one other thing from Adam. He says, also something else we can bring up. He was checking back today and he said, after 17 games last year, Derry were 7 points behind Rovers. This season, Derry are 1 point ahead, despite the fact they've missed Connolly and Dumigan. He said Derry have had three very strong windows since the money came in, and he'd expect the same this summer with another three or four top signings. Maybe James McLean could be one. But yeah, no, he makes a fair point. Have we brushed Derry aside too easily? Just say I think no.
It's more.
Just say no, so we can wrap this up. I was hoping you'd say no.
Look, I've gone for them in the predictions league, right? And I'm definitely wavering and faltering and all the rest of it. But like, it's just the Rovers thing, you know, yeah. The way they batter everybody around them. I know they didn't do it last week, but that's who they are. They're battering everybody in front of them all the time. You know, I think they're going to go down to Cork and pump them as well. So I just don't see it.
Right.
It's just unfortunate. Yeah, sorry.
Look, that's where we'll leave it. A huge thanks to our main sponsor, Anthony Quinn, Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. Thanks to all of our listeners again this week. You've been tuning in your absolute droves so far this season. It's really been heartening. And again, down in Wexford the other night, people coming up to us telling us they're listening every week and shaking our hands and all the rest. So we really do love bumping into our listeners when we're out and about with games. So if you do see us at a game, don't be afraid to come over for a chat. But from myself and Gary, big personal thank you to everyone who continues to tune in and everyone that's continuing to interact with us on Twitter as well. So look, I'll ask you as ever, do share the podcast on your own social media when it comes out in the morning. And yeah, hit that subscribe button if you haven't already done so. And as I said, we look forward to meeting a few of our listeners around the country as the season goes on. But for this week, from Kieran Burt, from Gary Riley, thanks for listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. We'll speak to you again next week.
Thanks for listening. Check out betweenthestripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.